By the end of 1832, Charles Darwin had been travelling for a year on the Beagle. Most of the journey was spent surveying the coast of South America, giving Darwin the opportunity to travel inland. As he was not an official member of the ship's crew, Darwin's father paid his way. The cost came to about £1,600 in the end. To put this in perspective, Darwin's servant, Covington, made £60 per annum. Darwin was impressed with the rugged horsemanship and lifestyle of the Gauchos. Throughout the rest of his life, he would sometimes end his letters with an adios and smoke a Gaucho-style cigarette on the sofa after lunch. Darwin was deeply impressed with the vast pampas of Argentina, though at the time of his visit, a bitter war was taking place between settlers and native peoples. On many occasions, he was in real danger. We must picture the 23-year-old Darwin galloping over the plains with pistols in his belt. Along the coast, he unearthed fossil bones of an extinct giant ground sloth the size of a small elephant. He also unearthed the fossil bones of several other large extinct species. What could cause a species of great creatures to go extinct? Darwin did not hit on a solution during the voyage, but the similarity between the fossils of extinct creatures and the present inhabitants of South America was one of the three kinds of evidence that would first convince Darwin that life must evolve.
29th of August, 1832. This day last year, I arrived home from North Wales and first heard of this voyage. It is amusing to imagine my surprise if anybody in the mountains of Wales had whispered to me, "This day next year, you will be beating off the coast of Patagonia." And yet, how natural an occurrence it now appears to me. 6th of September. In the morning, we stood into the Bahia Blanca. A small schooner passed near to us. It was a sealer bound to the Rio Negro. Mr. Harris, the captain, volunteered piloting us into the bay. He gave us a great deal of useful information about the country. Bahia Blanca has only been settled within the last 6 years, previous to which even the existence of the bay was not known. It is designed as a frontier fort against the Indians and thus to connect Buenos Aires to Rio Negro. In the time of the old Spaniards before the independence, the latter was purchased from a native chief of the place. The settlers at Bahia Blanca did not follow this just example, and in consequence, ever since, a barbarous and cruel warfare has been carried on. 7th of September. In the morning, the captain, the pilot, and myself started with a pleasant breeze for the settlement. It is distant about 20 miles. The pilot soon lost his reckoning, so we took by chance the first creek we could find. But it gradually became so narrow that the oars touched on each side and we were obliged to stop. From our boat, nothing within the horizon was to be seen but flat beds of mud. The day was not very clear, and as the sailors expressed it, things loomed high. We had much trouble in getting along, as we stuck several times on the bottom. In the evening we arrived about 4 miles distant from the settlement. Here were several of the wild gaucho cavalry waiting to see us land. They formed by far the most savage, picturesque group I have ever beheld. Round their waists they had bright-coloured shawls forming a petticoat, beneath which were fringed drawers. Their boots were very singular. They are made from the hide of the hock joint of horses' hind legs, so that it is a tube with a bend in it. This they put on fresh, and thus drying on their legs, it is never again removed. The spurs are enormous, being from 1 to 2 inches long. They all wore the poncho. Thus equipped, with sabres and short muskets, they were mounted on powerful horses. The men themselves were far more remarkable than their dresses. The greater number were half Spaniard and Indian, some of each pure blood and some black. The Indians, whilst gnawing bones of beef, half recalled wild beasts. We mounted behind the gauchos and started at a hand gallop for the fort. Our reception here was not very cordial. The major is an old Spaniard, with the old feelings of jealousy. He could not contain his surprise and anxiety at a man of war having arrived for the first time in the harbour. He asked endless questions about our force, and in his mind's eye saw the British Marines taking his fort. These ridiculous suspicions made it very disagreeable to us, so that the captain determined to start early in the morning back to the Beagle. The settlement is seated on a turf plain. It contains about 400 inhabitants, of which the greater number are soldiers. The place is fortified, and good occasion they have for it. It has been attacked several times by large bodies of Indians. The war is carried on in the most barbarous manner. The Indians torture all their prisoners, and the Spaniards shoot theirs. A week ago, the Spaniards seized a great herd of horses and some prisoners. Amongst these was the old Toriano, who has governed a great district for many years. Two lesser chiefs, or caziques, came in hopes of arranging a treaty of liberation. It was all the same to the Spaniards. These three and eight more were led out and shot. On the other hand, the Comandante's son was taken some time since, and being bound, the children, a refinement in cruelty I've never heard of, prepare to kill him with nails and small knives. 8th of September. We arrived at the ship by the middle of the day. Two men on horseback had been seen reconnoitring the ship. As we intended to wood and water near to that spot, it was necessary for us to ascertain whether there was any camp there. Accordingly, three boats were manned and armed. Before reaching the shore, we saw five men gallop along the hill and then halt. The captain, upon seeing this, sent back the other two boats, wishing not to frighten them. When we came close, the men dismounted and approached the beach. It was a party of cavalry from Bahia Blanca. They told us that they had been sent down to look after the Indians. This, to a certain degree, was true, for we found marks of fire, but their present purpose, evidently, was to watch us. The gauchos were very civil and took us to the only spot where there was any chance of water. It was interesting seeing these hardy people fully equipped for an expedition. They sleep on the bare ground, and as they travel get their food. Already they had killed a puma or lion. They gave us an ostrich egg, and before we left them, they found another nest, or rather depository, in which there were 24 of the great eggs. It is an undoubted fact that many female ostriches lay in the same spot, thus forming one of these collections. September 9th. In the morning, divine service was read on the lower deck. After dinner, a large party of officers went on shore to see the country. For the first 2 miles from the beach, it is a succession of sand hillocks thickly covered with a coarse herbage. Then comes the pampas, which extend for many miles, and in the distance is the Sierra de Ventana, a chain of mountains which we imagine to be lofty. The ground was in every direction tracked by the ostriches and deer. Excepting these, death appeared to reign over all other animals. I never saw any place before so entirely destitute of living creatures. 10th of September. All hands have been busily employed today, some surveying, some digging a well for water, and others cutting up an old wreck for firewood. 12th of September. Went out shooting with Mr. Wickham. To my great delight, I succeeded in shooting a fine buck and doe. The captain's servant shot three more. We were obliged to send a boat's crew to carry them to the shore. One of mine, however, was previously disposed of. I left it on the ground, a substantial beast, but in the evening the vultures had picked even the bones clean. I am spending September in Patagonia, much in the same manner as I should in England, viz., in shooting. In this case, however, there is the extra satisfaction of knowing that one gives fresh provisions to the ship's company. 15th of September. The gauchos have been employed hunting for us and have bivouacked near the coast. They offered to lend me a horse to accompany them in one of their excursions. I gladly accepted. The party consisted of 9 men and 1 woman, all most wild in their appearance and attire. As for the woman, she was a perfect nondescript. She dressed and rode like a man. Until dinner, I did not guess that she was otherwise. The hunters catch everything with the 2 or 3 balls fastened to the thongs of leather. They form themselves into a sort of crescent, each man less than 1/4 mile apart. One goes some way ahead and endeavours to drive the animals towards the others and thus in a manner encircling them. I saw one most beautiful chase. A fine ostrich tried to escape. The gauchos pursued it at a reckless pace, each man whirling the balls round his head. The foremost at last threw them. In an instant the ostrich rolled over, its legs being fairly lashed together by the thong. Its dying struggles were most violent. The men's riding was most excellent, especially in the quickness and precision with which they turn. The horses are soon fatigued from such violent exercise, and it is necessary often to change them and pick out fresh ones from the herd, which always accompany the party. In the middle of the day they lighted a fire and soon roasted some eggs and some armadillos in their hard cases. They had neither water, salt or bread. Of the two latter, for weeks together they never taste, so that it makes little difference to them where they live. Like to snails, all their property is on their backs, and their food all around them. September 19th. Walked to the plains and shot some small birds for specimens. September 23rd. a large party was sent to fish in a creek about 8 miles distant. Great numbers of fish were caught. I walked on to Punta Alta to look after fossils. To my great joy, I found the head of some large animal embedded in a soft rock. It took me nearly 3 hours to get it out. As far as I'm able to judge, it is allied to the rhinoceros. The schooner has arrived and been taken to the creek. Mr. Wickham and a party of men have erected tents and are living there during the refit of the vessel. October 2nd. Early in the morning, the captain with a large party landed in the 4 whale boats. King and I went in one direction to geologize, and Mr. Bino in another to shoot. During our walk, I observed the wind had freshened and altered its point, but I paid no further attention to it. When we returned to the beach, we found 2 of the boats hauled up high and dry, and the others gone on board. The captain, 2 hours previously, had had some difficulty in getting off, and now the line of white breakers clearly showed the impossibility. It was an unpleasant prospect to pass the night with thin clothes on the bare ground, but it was unavoidable, so we made the best of it. At night, no supper was served out, as we were 18 on shore and very little food left. We made a sort of screen with the boat sails and prepared to pass the night. It was very cold, but by all huddling in a heap, we managed pretty well till the rain began, and then we were sufficiently miserable. At daybreak, things wore a very bad appearance. The sky looked dirty, and it blew a gale of wind. The Beagle was pitching very deeply, and we thought it not impossible that she would be forced to slip cable and run out to sea. We afterwards heard she rode it out well, but that some of the seas went right over her. It was now time to look after our provisions. We breakfasted on some small birds and 2 gulls, and a large hawk found dead on the beach. In the evening, however, to our great joy and surprise, the wind lulled, and the captain in his boat was able to come within some 100 yards of the coast. He threw over a cask with provisions, which some of the men swam out and secured. This was all very well, but against the cold at night, there was no remedy. I never knew how painful cold could be. I was unable to sleep even for a minute from my body shivering so much. By the middle of the next day, we were all on board the Beagle, and most thoroughly after our little adventure did we enjoy its luxuries. 8th of October. After breakfast, I walked to Punta Alta. In the same place where I have before found fossils, I obtained a jawbone, which contained a tooth. By this, I found out that it belongs to the great antediluvial animal, the Megatherium. This is particularly interesting, as the only specimens in Europe are in the King's collection at Madrid, where, for all purposes of science, they are nearly as much hidden as if in their primeval rock.